How's everybody doing tonight? Okay? Can you hear me? So Dempsey called the other day and asked me to fill in for him. So that's why you get to see me up here tonight. I do see a few visitors. We do thank you all for being here with us. We'll be here again on Sunday at 9 for Bible study and 10 for worship service. So I may have to stop here because my notes are pretty messy and figure out what I actually wrote down and decipher that. But just bear with me a little bit. So I guess tonight we're going to be starting in Matthew chapter 13. If you want to go ahead and turn over there. I kind of am at a little disadvantage because last week I had to work late, and the week before I taught Jeff's class, so I wasn't in here for the last two class periods to kind of get the flow of how things went. But chapter 13 is predominantly a sermon for most of the chapter, and it's made up of Jesus teaching in a new method that he uses, and that's obviously his parables. And it's made up of 8 parables, and if you look at those parables, they have one general theme. Does anybody recognize the one theme that's in those parables? Yeah, it's teaching lessons about the kingdom of heaven. And so an interesting perspective really about this is if you look at verse 1, it says, on that day, Jesus went out of the house and was sitting by the sea. Well, that day is the day that was happened in chapter 12. And if you think about all the things that happened during chapter 12, you go back, what were some of the things that had, there's a lot of tension there in chapter 12. What were some of the things that went on there? It was a Sabbath day, and what did Jesus do? He healed a man, right? And so the Pharisees, they didn't like that, so it created some tension. He also, he did another miracle. He cast out a demon. And so then there was the questioning of his authority that the Pharisees didn't appreciate or recognize his authority that he had. And then later on in the chapter, and so that all those two things created some tension and some uneasiness. And then later on in the chapter, his family may be sparked by the fact that there's this tension going on between him and the Pharisees. They interrupt or butt into his teaching. It creates this awkward moment too. And so they interfered there. And so, you know, this motivated by these tense discussions with the Pharisees and what went on, I think we see that there's a growing opposition of the leaders. His family and his friends are worried. And, you know, large crowds, as we see here in the beginning of this chapter 13, they start to gather to him. And then all this is going on while he's trying to prepare his disciples. And a lot of this is over the fact that there's a misconception or a misunderstanding of the kingdom, I think. And so Jesus in chapter 13, he begins to teach them about the kingdom. And another interesting thing about the way Matthew set up, and we're going to start there in chapter 13 and verse 10, but the way Matthew presents this in his in the gospel, he doesn't give like the whole sermon. But he gives parts of the sermon, and then we seem to have excerpts that happen afterwards where the apostles or the disciples ask him what something means, or he explains it. And so that helps us to understand it better. And so what I want to do before we even start into the first of the parables is I want us to look at Jesus's answer to them in verses 10 through 17 of why they're... why he's teaching in parables. So 10 through 17, would somebody like to read that, verses 10 through 17? Just anybody.
The disciples came and said to him, why do you speak to them in parable? Jesus answered them, so you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted. For whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will have in abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because while seeing they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. In their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, you will keep on hearing, but will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but will not perceive. For the heart of this people has become dulled. With their ears they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise they would see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and understand with their heart and return, and I will heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it.
Okay, thank you, Nate. I guess before I go on, did anybody have any comments or questions on what I was saying there about or earlier? Okay. Okay, so in verse 11, Jesus speaks of the mystery here. So is this mystery, what is the mystery he's talking about? The mystery of the kingdom, we could say, if we use the same kind of language, yeah, but the gospel. And is it something that is... that people can't understand? It's like ungraspable or anything like that. No, the mystery isn't that. It's not that type of mystery or mysterious, but it's a mystery because it hasn't been revealed yet. And really, Jesus in his ministry is in the process of revealing what the kingdom is like and what it's going to be. So it's from that standpoint, it's not something that cannot be understood. And really, Jesus, I don't believe, was ready to reveal it to everyone. And that's one reason I think that he's speaking in parables, because the Jews, their whole idea of what the kingdom was totally wrong. And so they weren't able to handle it all probably at one point in time of what the kingdom was supposed to be like. And so some of the things that I wrote down, just jotted some things down, that the reasons that I believe that the Jews wouldn't be able to handle is because their whole system of the way they did things was going to be totally uprooted and turned over. And the whole Jewish system was going to be gone. The fact that the Gentiles would be brought in, things like that, they weren't able to handle that. And you had the other people that wanted a physical type kingdom, and yet Christ and his kingdom, the Messiah, had to die. So those types of things, I think, are veiled or left as a mystery for these people. The disciples, on the other hand, they wanted and they needed to know these things because they asked Jesus, why do you speak in parables? And so they come to him asking about what these things mean. But the others, they misunderstood what the kingdom was supposed to be and what Jesus and God wanted with that.
Mark,
yes, sir.
If you go back to chapter 12, that's in the previous study there, they have followed him as servant of the devil and accused him of blaspheming. And so they have refused, the Jewish leaders have refused to listen to him because they did not want to accept something different than what they were doing. And so they were rejecting Jesus. And so from that perspective, since the kingdom is, as you say, it's a real mystery, because God was revealing something new that they didn't understand, but they weren't willing to understand it because they didn't want something.
Yeah, they had prejudices based on what they wanted or maybe how they thought things should go. and preconceived notions, I guess.
If you want to start bringing someone around to an idea, the easiest way to get them to something is something like a parable. I'm trying to describe a new app to my mom. It's the Uber for this, or it's the, you know, I'll take a common idea that both of us understand and tell her how it's a little bit different. And so he's using this parable to help bridge that and get them to the idea so that he can start building on it afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, because in the first day of math class, they don't teach you trigonometry. You learn what numbers are and you build on things. And so the whole process of revealing is taking place. Now, let's see. In verse 12, let's read verse 12. For whoever has, to him shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Now, this may be an obvious question, but for whoever has what? What do they have there? The person that does. I wrote down the knowledge and just awareness of the teaching of Jesus. And I think that's the focus of the statement. Whoever has the knowledge of what Jesus has been teaching, more shall be given. And whoever has understanding, I guess, would be a better way to say that. Understanding of what Jesus has been teaching, then more will be given. So the parables are something that's new that Jesus is in Matthew. He's teaching here with parables now. Up until this point, what type of teaching had he been doing so far? Was it mysterious? But it was plain though, right? You read the Sermon on the Mount, and it's pretty straightforward. So his teaching had been plain and simple. And all those who heard it had what? They had an equal opportunity to be able to understand it. But there's a difference now with the way that he's presenting the parables. So the people that have the understanding and want the understanding will be able to attain more because of that desire. Because their minds are opened up to the concepts that are in parables. But on the other hand, so that they have the opportunity to know the teaching and then they can do something with it. And now parables would help those actually go to the next level. Yes, sir.
I think of truth as like a meal.
As a meal?
A meal.
Okay.
For those who are humble of heart, truth is tasty and nourishing, and it's something lovely. Those who are not humble of heart, they choke on it. And these parables are kind of like that. They were designed so that those who were humble of heart would see the truth that's in there, would accept that.
Gobble them up.
But those who are self-righteous or those who have their preconceived idea of what the kingdom is supposed to be, they're choking on this message. And I think that's what Jesus is getting at here. These parables are a division. They divide between those who have the humble heart, willing to solicit, and those who have not. It nourishes one group and it chokes the other group.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I appreciate that, Eddie. One of the things I'd written down is that the parables would help them go to the next level spiritually in a way. But then on the other hand, it's just going to do nothing and it's going to be no profit to those people that are, you know, hard headed or don't have any type of spiritual thought process. Is there any other comments on that before we move on?
I think this, yeah, you know, it's, I like the way that they use the division. I think about, you know, that a guy like Moses in the Old Testament, who is a faithful man, and then God comes to him and makes him the forester, the person that right there takes him to Sinai. But, you know, even before that, when God comes to him, he's just there living on his own, that's not very faithful. He was already a man with a godly heart. God took that and made him give him more. But then you contrast that to a guy like Pharaoh, if you look at God hardening Pharaoh's heart, you kind of think, well, how is that fair? That's kind of cheating, he hardened his heart. But Pharaoh was already that kind of man. God took the kind of man who was already opposed to his will and made it even worse. So it's like he's taking him and he he's separating him farther, drawing one closer to it and pushing one farther away.
Okay. Now you started to get into like some of the principle of the first parable. You're getting ahead of us. That's okay. Yeah. So like when God pushed on Pharaoh with all that pressure, that's what caused Pharaoh's heart to harden. It wasn't God forcing him to do that, I don't think. It was his reaction to that, right? In verses 14, oh, verse 13, verse 13. So therefore I speak to them in parables, because while they see, while seeing do they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. So he's just pointing out the fact that he's speaking in parables, and because these people just have no ability to see, to listen, to hear, understand anything what he's saying, and it helps, as you all suggested, create that division, further division. Then he gives an example in verses 14 through 15 of a quote from Isaiah where it says, and in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, you will keep on hearing, but will not understand, and you will keep on seeing, but will not perceive. For the heart of the people has become dull, and with their ears, they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and to understand with their heart and return, and I should heal them. So I think just what we see from this quote from Isaiah, he's pointing out the fact that they're doing the exact thing that Judah did, is they refused to listen to Isaiah's teaching, or these people would, and because that they didn't want to hear it, they're going to be made worse, and this generation is no, you know, they're no different, they're the same. And I'd like to point out there's a huge contrast between that type of person that we see that's unwilling to listen, and then that of those who are, because in verse 16 it says, but blessed are your eyes because you see, and your ears because they hear. So you have this blessing or this happiness because of willingness and desire to listen to the gospel and let it affect you, as opposed to this just, you know, just a spiraling circle in the drain kind of thing on the other side of that. And I've always been kind of fascinated with verse 17, where it says, for truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Mike mentioned Abraham there a minute ago. When I read this, I think of people like Abraham and Moses. And you mentioned that Moses, though, didn't you? Sorry. We get there. But, you know, men like that, you know, a man like Isaiah, David, King David, because what do we hear about those people in Hebrews? How did they live? They lived by faith in God, and they looked to the future, right? And we're so blessed because we're able to see God's full revelation and his plan. And we're able to partake in that really as in and be able to see it all. And that's to me, that's just a huge difference that we have an advantage. Maybe, I don't know if you could say that, over those people, great biblical heroes. So that's just something that I thought was pretty cool. And it just shows how special the gospel and the kingdom really are. So let's see. And so ultimately the parables would benefit the believers. And in a way, I've thought about this before. If you think about how the Pharisees wanted to kill Jesus, and there were people that wanted to make him king right then and there, this created more time for him to develop his plan and not them be able to just come and take him and kill him or to make him king, but just this slow revelation, slow revealing of everything. I don't know, has anybody got any thoughts or reaction to that statement, or am I totally off base? Okay. Well, if you want to talk about that later, I just thought I'd throw that out there because I think about some weird stuff sometimes. But anyway, okay. So now to the first parable. in chapter 13. This is a parable that Jesus himself refers to as the parable of the sower. And before, as we get started here, all of these are about someone receiving the message of the gospel, and then it's ultimately about their heart. The interesting thing is, it's Jesus calls it the parable of the sower, and the sower is not mentioned after he throws the seed, but that's okay, because that could be indicative of this is inclusive to anybody who sows a seed, whether it's Jesus or an apostle or us today. So it's about the message of the gospel and about the hearts of the people that receive it. So let's see. Let's look at verse 4. We'll try to look at the parable and then for each one, and then the interpretation of it as we go along. So, okay, let's see. Verse 3. And he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, "Behold, the sower went out to sow, and he sowed some seeds. As he sowed, some seeds fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate them up." Okay. So anytime, I just want to mention that anytime that the seed is sown or the gospel is preached, it's a unique and special position that the hearer is in, because they are in a spot where they can know God's mind and his plan for humanity and all the things that he's done. And also it puts the listener in a position of making a decision. So their listener is responsible for how he responds to that message. That's the case in all these. And as we get started, I just wanted to kind of point that out about just the unique special position and the response that's required. So as he sowed, some seeds fell beside the road and the birds came and ate them up. Let's see. In verse 19. So this is when anyone hears the word. He says, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one on whom the seed has been sowed beside the road. There's a phrase there, and does not understand it. I don't think this is referring to this individual's intellectual capacity. But it's clearly involves where they are, maybe morally, or where their heart is. Because this message, this same message, produces excellent results in others. And so the fault is not in the message or in the seed, but it's in the one who receives it. I wrote down a question: is how or why is someone in a position where they are so hard that this message about spiritual things, about concern over sin, about the hope that we have through redemption, that they would be impossible for them to understand that? So what? How is somebody getting that position?
I think it goes back to one of the things you mentioned earlier, the idea of preconceived ideas of what the kingdom is. But Jesus is saying the kingdom of heaven is life. And so that's really what this scene is. It's the message of the kingdom. Is that a kingdom I'm willing to accept, or is it a kingdom that I decided I don't want? And I think ultimately that's what you find with these, the hard parts, is the ones who say they don't want that kind of kingdom.
Okay. So they maybe have a preconceived notion. Anybody else have any other thoughts of why or somebody would be like this? I wrote down a handful of things, but
it's maybe not why they're like that, but when he introduces the idea of the kingdom of heaven is the result of seed being sown, that's completely opposite of the way the Jews have looked at it. They felt like the kingdom of heaven was based on where he was born.
Their heritage.
And so Jesus is completely changing the nature of the kingdom to something that is dependent upon a person's heart.
Okay.
The growth of the kingdom is only dependent on your heart. And so if your heart is not willing to accept then you have no chance of understanding.
Okay. So I had kind of written down pride over like heritage, who you were, fear of a new truth, you know, something that's new that you were, that they would be afraid of, and just an unwillingness to be able to want to change. Yes, I believe the soil represents the heart of the men who receive the seed, which is the word sown on them. Or I guess they would say sown on them. Here I thought I wasn't gonna have enough time or material. I'm all around. Oh well, I'll have to hurry. Okay, so because this individual is so hardened, it's easy for the evil one to come and just snatch that seed. Because there's no time for that, those thoughts to even really penetrate their mind. And so the seed just gets snatched away. And that could be in the form of just another passing thought that you know, or another, or a temptation of some sort. Just anything that would be evil to distract and just get that, just wipe that off the table. Because we don't, you know, Satan's like, we don't need that. You know, you're fine the way you are. Because I believe Satan's purpose is to pull mankind away from Christ, and he'll use any means possible to be able to do that.
Well, I think this emphasizes us having understanding, but it only takes Satan. This understanding is like the one that we kind of got down and spent so much time in the Word. But that's good, because you don't want to be the kind of Christian who just says, I don't really need to understand anything. I just, well, you know, I just say Jesus. I just believe Jesus, so that's all you need. If your faith is rooted in something where you just say, well, I accepted Jesus, I don't even understand the gospel, then you put yourself in a situation where the devil's going to come along and snatch you away eventually.
Yeah, and understanding is really, it's like the key, it's the beginning of that whole process of growth, which, you know, we'll kind of, I guess we'll see that here shortly. I might move on that way. I have got to cover everything. All right, so we'll move on to the second type of soil, and that's rocky places in verse 5. And others fell on the rocky places where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up because they had no depth of soil. So it's kind of like, well, my old house I lived in, The guy across the street, he really kept a nice looking yard. And they had, when he built his house, they came in and they laid sod. So his grass was already there, right? Well, there was a big old rock out in the middle of that yard. And what do you think happened every time that it got knocked, you know, like the rain would stop? What happened? Big brown spot would grow bigger out in the yard because there was no depth of soil there. So the grass started to die. It was fine for a little while I had some water. But that's kind of what I think about, is this shallow or little dirt over some rock. It's superficial. Yes, sir.
That's very common in Palestine. The very thing you described, the farmers there will, you know, when they have a dry season, they will mark the spots that dry up where it grows, where it dries up. And before the next planting season, they're going to dig down and dig out those rocks. And so this was something that was very, very common for them, because it underneath it is broken bedrock that was always moving up to the surface. So you never knew from one season to the next where things were going to be, but you find out as soon as you get to the dry season.
So they might have, this analogy would have been a little more apropos to them, maybe. So that's interesting. But they have a superficial, or they are superficial because there's no soil. In verse 20, we have what Jesus says about it. And the one on whom the seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. All right, so this person has this superficial root system, so to speak, or faith or a zeal. They haven't really maybe considered the full ramifications of what giving their life to Christ means. And they're willing to listen. They're open-minded. The word actually penetrates their mind, where on the other seed, it didn't even get, it couldn't go anywhere because it was so hard. It actually penetrates. And they understand. And it says what about after their understanding? What does it say there? How do they receive it? Yeah, they receive it with joy. And why would they not receive it with joy? Because there's joy and forgiveness and knowing that God has adopted us or them. And this type of angel, the individual, they often will begin to excel, but it's short-lived. And why is it short-lived? Let's look at verse 21. Yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. So his root system is not good. It doesn't, it hasn't been able to penetrate down into the to deeper soil, so to speak. So I was thinking about this. The roots they do at least two things. They may do more than two things. I'm not an agronomist, but I feel like that they get the nutrients out of the soil and then they give stability. And so spiritually, I think nutrients would be able to get a greater understanding, maybe. And the stability would be being able to apply that to whenever affliction or trials do come, pressure comes, that you're able to withstand those pressure or those trials and things. So this person's not prepared mentally to handle the difficult spiritual situations. And so when affliction or persecution arises, and notice that it says because of the word. So because of this decision that they've made, these things come, whether it is maybe, you know, from their family or the community or whatever. But they have a problem. They fall away. It's like the whole idea of dying to themselves. They haven't really considered that. So when people cave under pressure, it shows a lack of preparedness, I think. And so this individual was really quick to accept the word. And then he was willing to go. Let's see. I can't read my writing there. So he, you know, he was willing to accept the word, but once like push came to shove, he just quickly caved. There's a lot of people that we run into and we see that are like this individual. On the other hand, the one who has decided how far ahead of time they will be able to withstand the pressure of the trials and the persecutions. Does anybody have any comments on this? Charlene?
There's also a component once people accept it readily and immediately. I'm so happy about it. As soon as they are called upon to make any kind of sacrifice, that's what causes them to fall. Because you know they want this to be okay. Now I'm trying to get Christian. I'm going to believe the gospel. I'm going to do this. Everything's going to be wonderful. And a lot of churches even teach this, I've noticed. But once they realize that, no, everything's not going to be wonderful. There's going to be suffering. There's going to be some sacrifices that you're going to have to make. There's going to be changes you have to make. That's too much for a lot of people. Because they don't want to do that.
Yeah, there. What's the phrase? Have you counted the cost, or have they counted the cost of what of discipleship is? Are they willing? So that's something that as Christians we have to decide early, if we're going to be willing to make those sacrifices and if we're willing to die for our cause.
Like it makes me think of the new Christian when they're first baptized, they're so joyful and willing to study, and I think it's so important that we remember to keep encouraging them and to keep studying with them because it's easy for them to fall away. because they do not have those roots yet.
No, I think you're 100% right. And I was going to kind of try to mention some of that at the end, but while we're here, you know, with the person, the first guy that's so hard that the seed wouldn't penetrate it, you know, at some point that soil could be broken and tilled a little bit. So we can continue working with whatever type of individual that we encounter in teaching the gospel. But thank you for those comments. Anybody else have any other comments? Okay, so we'll move on to what I've titled as the preoccupied individual from verse 7. Back there in verse 7, this is the third one. And others fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them out. Okay, so there's a couple things to think about here. One of the first things is whatever's going to grow a thorn is going to be able to grow another plant. So I think that this soil is probably pretty decent soil because it's already going to be able to grow a thorn. So that's one thing. But the soil in this situation is already occupied with the thorns. Now, it seems that they maybe kind of come up together. So the thorns weren't necessarily full-grown thorns. But it says when, you know, the thorns come up and choke them out. So these two things seem to maybe they grow together. You know, they may have already been sprouted or whatever, but the thorns choking them out, to me, they indicate the fact that, let's see, there was no room for the seed of the gospel because the thorns choked them out. And so maybe something to think about it in this is this soil only capable of sustaining so much growth? Okay, does that make sense? And, you know, there's so much space there too, physical space in this one area. And how similar can that be to the human mind or heart? They can only handle so much power to grow so many things. Does that make sense? Something eventually has to give. And so I think, you know, we can kind of draw some of those conclusions. Well, that could maybe be part of it, but it's also maybe the part of it that's where we kind of do it to ourselves, where we just get overdone with things and our minds are going a lot of different places, perhaps. Are any other thoughts on that, Charlene?
Well, you know, it seems to me like the thorns, and I think he said something about that in there, I'm not sure, but. Or worldly things that people don't want to give up. So they prey on them and they become their priorities, and that doesn't leave any room for the gospel.
Yeah, you're making a good point because I kind of got ahead of myself and we didn't read verse 22. Okay. So let's all look at verse 22. And the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and becomes unfruitful. So I got ahead of myself just a tad. It's these things of the world and the desire. It's using, you know, the deceitfulness of riches. Those things just, they overpower what the word in that man's heart. Yes, sir.
I've never been a farmer, but from what I understand, when you get weeds, you know, in the crops, it's not killing the crops, but it's preventing the crops from bearing fruit. The amount of fruit, let's say ears of grain that you get, are going to be much smaller. You know, they're not going to be full-bodied ears of grain because the weeds, the thorns, are taking the nutrients out of the soil.
that would go towards the plant that bear fruit. And that's really the idea that I think Jesus is getting there, is when the world is drawing so much of our attention, so much of our effort, so much of our lives, we have very little left to give to God.
Yeah, we're exhausted.
Yeah, and so now I think that's the unfruitfulness. It's not that we died, it's the fact that we're not bearing any fruit.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit of what I was getting at there a minute ago, saying the soil being able to sustain both things. But yeah,
I think that's a great point, because, and this is the one that I think is the most important to Christians, because the first plant is dead. It was eaten up by the seeds. And the second plant is dead because it started growing and then it withered away. But in this third example, there's a plant there. Right? So, this room is not, when you go to church, it's not full of people who were carried away by the devil because they wouldn't be in church. And it's not full of people who started out and then fell away. But it might be full of people who are just plants that aren't bearing any fruit. And so I think this is the one that really hits on the nose. You know, I hear the first one, I'm like, I don't have that problem.
Yeah, you're like, that's a slam dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the second one, the persecution, okay? That makes me a little nervous because I don't know, I haven't really been persecuted. But I feel like, that's one where I at least have a fighting chance. But then I get to this next one. And I think when I leave here tonight, I go home, what am I going to be thinking about? Am I going to be thinking about Jesus Christ? Am I going to be thinking about God? Or am I going to be thinking about, I hope my job goes well, and I hope I have enough insurance in case my kids get sick, and I hope I have enough money to retire someday. And all these things about the world, like, I'm not going to have enough. And Jesus says, the Father takes care of, takes care of us, and if he clothes the animals, what do you have to worry about? But do I listen? No, I worry. Am I going to have enough? Do I need to make more money? Do I need to have more security? And you just worry about those things. And like you said, like Eddie said, it causes you to not have the energy. You waste all your energy on that. Yes, I do. And then you don't bear the fruit that God wants you to bear.
All right. Yeah, I agree. Thank you for those comments. Let's see. You got 5 minutes left. I never thought I would say, I wish that bell hadn't rung. But so real quickly, here's a man who's unable to focus his life on God. He has good intentions to live a life with faith, but he's just overoccupied. And his loyalty to worldly things overpowers his loyalty to God and chokes out his spiritual life. That's just kind of how I had summed that up a little bit. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. How do you go about, what's the best way, of course, I know studying is not studying, but we have to live in this world, and we have to function in this world, whether we like it or not. I mean, sure, I'd like to go off and, live on top of a mountain alone, no temptation, and nothing.
You'd be tempted there too, probably.
Yeah, really, and nothing to have to deal with, but we have to live in this world, and we have to deal with certain matters. And sometimes, no matter how hard we try, it's still going to improve. What our spiritual life, because the world loses itself. I mean, we have to.
Well, we have to live in the world.
We have to make a living. We have to pay our debt. We have to, there's certain things that we just have to do, whether we like it or not. And that can sometimes, no matter how hard you try, that can be overwhelming. It's like a constant thing you have to keep in your mind. Don't let this overwhelm you. And I don't think, I know I don't.
I'll give you an uneducated man's response to that is maybe just where your focus is the simplest answer. What are we going to focus on? You'd be foolish not to be concerned over things, right? But where are we going to put our focus and where are we going to, put our faith and our trust? Okay, so if we practice doing the right thing, it'll be easier to do. So
it's quite a long answer, but always praying more, I think, is the big thing. Instead of sitting there worrying about the problems, you can pray about them and focus back on God.
Yeah, so at 2 a.m. when I was worried about this class, I should have been praying about it. Yes, Kevin.
I know Sid used to say, one
first thing you think about when you wake up.
That's a gauge, right? You know what the first thing I think of every morning? What day is this? But your point, you're saying that kind of helps you see where your focus is, I guess.
Another thing I like to care is the world. Obviously, we have to live in the world. But what do I care about? Am I worried about visiting my or seeing certain shows on TV? Make sure I have certain things. Make sure that I said what I'm thinking about. I'm worried about all the time. I'm thinking about my favorite sports team. You know, is that more important to me? Those are areas of the world. I'm worried about my yard looks. I'm worried about it's nothing. You can't do that. Is that priority?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, focus or priority, you know. But there's a lot of ways. Well, you start to care less about some things. I care a whole lot less about UK basketball than I used to. I still like it, but if I could just say one, I'm not going to say much about the good soul because hopefully we all recognize this is a Christian who is, as it says, is producing good fruit. But I wanted to say one thing. These four conditions of heart are not permanently fixed. Okay? Whether it's the hardest one, the one in the shallow, rocky soil, the one with the thorns, or this one that's producing fruit, they're not permanently fixed. So any of them can change. So that first heart can ask for understanding, and I believe by the grace of God, he'll have understanding. That superficial one can quickly, he can believe longer, and he can continue to grow. The preoccupied person that's choked by the world, they can, you know, put these things out, and they can become the next person that's producing the fruit. And then, you know, we can also be the type of people that are producing fruit and can start going back the other way. So that's what we kind of need to learn from that parable. So thank you all for class tonight. And I guess we'll be dismissed since the kids are already up here.